Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, where today John Manuel and J.J. Cooper, we're going to talk to you about American League West top 10 prospects. Obviously, with every podcast, we take your questions. I haven't given this email out in a while, but podcast@baseballamerica.com is a way to get those questions into the podcast, or you can tweet at us at JJCoop36, at John Manuel BA, and we'll talk American League West top 10 prospects, wrapping up our six-issue extravaganza. We are going to put a bow on it, sort of.
Yeah, we got a bigger bow. We got a bigger bow that goes over all of it.
We have two more big bows. We'll take a little break here, a little breather, everybody but me and Aaron Fitt, and to a lesser extent, Jim Callis.
Hey, I have to put all that on the website. That's going to be...
You do, but we'll all write up early draft preview and the 2012 college preview issue, which is in full swing. And after that issue, that little two-week, three-week interregnum of college baseball and the draft, we'll hit you hard with the top 100 prospects. That'll be the big bow. The other big bow to me is the prospect handbook. So we're going to actually have a second podcast about the prospect handbook that we'll record here today on this Friday in January. But let's wrap up the American League and all of our top 10s, JJ, talking about the top 10 in the American League West. And, of course, if you want 30 prospects, go to baseballamerica.com/store to get your 2012 prospect handbook. That's one way. If you go to baseballamerica.com/store, you can order the prospect handbook from us. And while you can order it elsewhere, and that's fine, order it however you want to order it. But if you order it from us, we go one louder. We'll have the 31st prospect, a supplement of a 31st prospect for all 30 teams.
And also worth noting, and you'll get it a lot sooner.
You will get it a lot sooner. The books are arriving today, and they'll be shipped shortly thereafter. So the Prospect Handbook and all your Baseball America 2012 reference books are available at baseballamerica.com/store. JJ, the American League West, a very dynamic landscape in the American League West. You've got the most likely team in baseball to move, the Oakland Athletics. First of all, they've already moved three times. So if there's any franchise that's most likely to move, it's the A's.
They still got some boxes lying around somewhere.
That's right. There's still some Philadelphia A's fans kicking around. And we know Bill James is still a Kansas City A's fan.
I know a Philadelphia A's fan.
Well, he must be 70 minimum.
He does aerobics.
Bill Carl. I didn't know that.
No, Ray Nemec.
Oh, Ray Nemec. Okay.
Ray Nemec is...
I did not know that Ray Nemec was a Philadelphia A's fan. Well, there are still some of those guys around. So now San Jose really would not be a big move. But it would be a big move for them financially, but obviously not geographically. But we're talking about a dynamic division with a new team coming in two seasons, the Houston Astros. We've got the Oakland A's possibly moving. The Seattle Mariners making big news with the Michael Pineda, Jesus Montero trade. And, of course, all the news that the Rangers and Angels have made. Let's just start at the top, though, JJ, the Texas Rangers. They made the biggest news of the week, signing Yu Darvish officially. We could debate the merits of Yu Darvish getting of the Rangers spending more than $100 million on Yu Darvish all we want. But let's talk about Yu Darvish as a number one prospect, because he jumps straight to the top of their prospect list, and that's not the same as jumping to the top of, say, the Indians' prospect list.
No.
This is a stout prospect list to jump to the front of.
This is one of the stoutest prospect lists, and I don't think there's a question he's the number one guy in it.
I say
that, and I love their number two prospect now, Jurickson Profar.
You know, what really strikes me about the Rangers' top 10 the most is their philosophy as a franchise is writ large in their top 10 prospects. It is the most upside top 10. It is the most foreign, international, however you want to call it. It's not just Latin, obviously, because we're talking about Yu Darvish, but it's the most international top 10 of all of our top 10s. It is the one with the most risk, I would say, of any of our top 10s, because there are a lot of these guys who may never see the major leagues. I mean, you're talking about 6-foot right-handers. You're talking about pitchers who've had very little success above A-ball. You're talking about guys with 50-5 strikeout-to-walk ratios. You're talking about guys who fit profiles and are dynamic but have a lot of work to do at the same time. So it is remarkable. Their entire top 30, I think there's only two players who are not high or extreme. I know that's the truth between their 11 to 30. That's for another podcast. But on the Baseball America grades, they have the riskiest top 30 in the book.
And it also has the highest upside.
Absolutely. They are a high upside, high risk, high reward organization. That's their philosophy, and they put their money where their mouth is.
And you know what? considering now, we have to kind of, it's funny how this recalibrates. If you grew up like I did, you know, and like you did, in the kind of where your formative baseball years were the late 70s, early, you know, and through the 80s. Those were my formative baseball years.
I agree.
I think of, like, for instance, I think of the Braves as, I have to remind myself that they're not a big market team.
Right.
Or a big revenue team. Because they were.
They
had Ted Turner, when they had the Superstation, they were a team that could go out there and say, we're going to spend a lot of money. They spent
it poorly. Their downfall in the mid-80s was that they spent lots of money on bad major league players like Alex Trevino. You know, I remember those kind of signings.
Or Nick Asaski, they signed him for a big contract and then he gets vertigo. They had all those kind of things. But they were a – and they're now – it's kind to call them a mid-revenue club now.
They're basically – it seems like their payroll has not changed from the low to mid-80s since, like, the late 90s. I mean, they've been, an $85 million payroll for more than a decade, it feels like.
Well, you have to also the Rangers – now, not that the Rangers have not had times where they've spent money, because they have.
Right, they have.
Chan Ho Park.
Exactly.
Alex Rodriguez. Yeah, they spent money.
Tom Hicks spent a lot of money.
But that being said, they have really – they've taken steps recently. I think this franchise has essentially – recast itself.
Absolutely.
It is a high revenue team that is willing to spend money, and that reflects the high risk. They spend money to acquire talent.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Absolutely.
I mean, we talked about the White Sox and the AL Central list, and the White Sox spend money to acquire talent nowhere except for the major league level.
You know who they remind me of the most is like the early 90s Blue Jays. That's who they remind you of. It's a big market, and it's a and they're never going
to
be
back-to-back World Series, just like
right.
The Blue
Jays. But they're also they will go after talent anywhere. No one was as international as the Blue Jays back in the day. Jose Pett, Diego Mar, Markwell, Guillermo Quiroz. I mean, like in the 90s, even after their heyday, they were spending money. Guillermo Quiroz got like $1.2 million out of Venezuela in like 1997. Diego Mar, Markwell, that was like $575,000 out of the Curacao or in the Netherlands.
Pett was coming out of Brazil.
Brazil, yeah, $750,000 in 1993. That blew people's minds. Glenn Williams, $825,000. Wasn't he their signee out of Australia?
No, Glenn Williams, the Braves.
Oh, he was the Braves. Okay, yeah. I can't remember who signed
him. I got to see him.
That's good.
Making in 1995.
They were a big market team, big revenue team back then. But that's who the Rangers, they are.
Oh, I couldn't help. The Orioles just signed a 17-year-old New Zealand softball player, and I couldn't help but think Travis Wilson.
That's right.
The last, New Zealand softball player, that I can think of.
They remind you of, like, those Braves and Blue Jays teams of the early 90s in that they are all about upside. And they're not going to draft like other people draft, even when they draft college players like a Mike Gold. It's a guy with some big tools who also had big risks. He struck out a lot in college. So they are a fascinating, consistent organization.
And the thing I've got to say with that is that if you are going to be a team that takes those risks, one of the things that's key to that is that you have to have a good development program as well.
That they believe in. They are convicted that they can draft high-risk players and it's not going to be less risk because they're Rangers.
And the thing about it is right now, you can make some arguments. Like, let's number two on this list, Jurickson Profar. When they signed him, he was considered, if you wanted to make him a hitter, it was high risk.
Yeah, absolutely. The consensus was pitcher, no doubt.
And they've not only let him be a hitter, but he's turned into something pretty special pretty quickly.
I would say that the consensus of our top 50s was that he was the top shortstop prospect in the minor leagues ahead of Manny Machado. That's pretty loud.
And I think there's a reason for that, which is Manny Machado, for all the good things he does.
Excuse me.
And he does. He does a lot of good things. Machado, though, when you talk to scouts, one question they have is you look at his body. You look at the size of him. You look at his feet is one of the things I've heard a couple guys say. You have to wonder, is he going to end up being a shortstop 5-10 years down the road?
Yeah, and
one has that worry with Profar.
But the funny thing is, in his write-up, it talks about that he might defer to Elvis Andrus down the line as a second baseman or even a third baseman. He gives you those options because he has precocious power and plate discipline. And it's really hard to knock a hole in Jurickson Profar. And one of my favorite encounters of the winter meetings actually this year was seeing, I think his first name is Don Young, who's an attorney in Hickory, North Carolina, one of the part owners of the Crawdads, and somebody that remembered me. I saw him and said, hey, do you remember I used to cover the team back in the day on the Boulevard of Linden? And he actually did sort of remember me, and we talked a lot, and he said that in the 19 years of being part owner of the Crawdads, where they've had guys like Carlos Lee and Magly Ordonez and some other decent alumni, Jurickson Profar is by far his favorite player. And he even told me a story about Jurickson Profar having a little too much confidence when he was like pulled over at a traffic stop and irritating a police officer, and the police officer calling Don Young and said, "Hey, this happened with Jurickson Profar." He didn't get arrested or anything. I'm just saying it was like a routine traffic stop, and I guess the guy basically thought, and this, I'm sure this happens in Hickory, North Carolina, and elsewhere in minor league burbs, he was a little too confident and had a little too much mouth. And he talked to Jurickson Profar about it, and he said the thing that he liked the best was the way that Jurickson Profar handled that, matured from that, and became basically somebody who knew that everything that he did was being watched in a small community like that and behaved appropriately. So we have no negatives on this guy. That's right. We have no negatives on this guy as a player, and all the reports of his makeup on the field are always about how the joy he has for the game. And now I keep getting reports on his makeup off the field being top notch, a guy who wants to be a star. And that's the way that he's a lot like Elvis Andrus, wants to be a leader.
But, and let's just
I
say,
think he's better. He has better tools than Elvis Andrus ever had.
At the plate,
right.
He's better than Elvis Andrus.
Yes.
I mean, he's got pop that Andrus does not have.
Just never showed the minor leagues and doesn't have. I do like to remember, by the way, though, that when those guys were all in the Savvy League, F-Mart, Andrus, Tabata, I don't know if you remember, we had like a scout's view where the scout that I talked to was like, you know, I'm going to take Elvis Andrus out of all those guys. And like Tabata was the guy that everybody was all fired up about. But I think we've always been Elvis Andrus guys, and with good reason.
But okay, rewind for a second. We'll rewind to number one, Yu Darvish.
Yes, good idea.
If you ask me, I do too. If you ask me, I know it's a lot of money, $117 million, I believe,
something like that.
You know, between the posting and the contract,
not our money, so I really don't keep track of the down to the dime.
But I'll say this again: it fits with what the Rangers are doing.
Yeah.
If you ask me, CJ Wilson is a safer bet. Over the next 5 years.
Agree. We know a lot more about what C.J. Wilson is than Yu Darvish.
But at the same time, Yu Darvish, every step of his career since he basically arrived in pro ball in Japan, has always had better stuff than C.J. Wilson. And you add it up. To me, Yu Darvish, if you're the Rangers, the reason you do this is that you look at it and say, Yu Darvish is the guy who could win us a World Series.
Yeah, I think that he was the best pitcher on the market this offseason, whether you're talking about trade or free agency. Who would you rather have, just in turn not involving the money, who would you rather have, Michael Pineda or Yu Darvish? I'd rather have Yu Darvish.
I don't know if I'd rather have Michael Pineda than Matt Latos or Gio Gonzalez.
I would definitely rather have Michael Pineda than Gio Gonzalez. Personally, Matt Latos is a good question. I'd probably have Matt Latos over Michael Pineda. I forgot about Latos. I'd still rather have Darvish than any of those guys.
No, I would too. I mean,
that could be a whole other podcast. Who would you rather have, Gio Gonzalez or Michael Pineda? I'd take Pineda.
And I like. I mean, these are all guys. If I had a team, I would like to have any of them.
That's right. Absolutely.
But
this guy is a guy where you didn't have to give up any players to get him. So
that helps
for the Rangers standpoint. I like that. Especially the other thing, that he's a ready-made ace right now, and they need an ace. The thing is, for the reason I liken these guys, the Blue Jays and the Braves, JJ, is that they're already good in the major leagues. So they can be – I think when you're already at that level in the major league, you could take more risks. It emboldens your scouts and your evaluators to go – because they see what wins championships, championship tools, big tools like Nelson Cruz and Josh Hamilton. So they're out trying to find championship tools.
And it goes a step further too. When you are a really good team at the big league level, we see this, the Yankees have a different approach than a lot of teams for a good reason, which is the role player for them is a trade piece, generally.
Correct.
Because they're not going to say, we're going to hand the job over to this guy and he'll be okay.
Right. That's not sufficient.
That doesn't happen very often. Because if that's the case, we'll go out and pay $10 million and get someone who's really good.
Yeah, Brandon Laird's a great example. Like when he was an Eastern League MVP, I remember him getting compared to Kevin Kuzmanoff or, you know, Joe Randa, whatever average third baseman you want to think over the last 15 years. That's who, you know, Brandon Laird was getting compared to. Yeah, he's okay. He's on that borderline of first division, second division regular, but probably a second division regular. That means he's a decent prospect. but not for the Yankees. And that means, like you said, they could always go out and get the first division regular.
That means that guy cannot. The Yankees can't say, "Hey, we're going to hand this job to this guy." Well, I think the Rangers are kind of reaching that point in some ways. In that, look, they've got Elvis Andrus.
Yeah, they are.
Jurickson and Profar, you know, maybe he moves, maybe Andrus, but, you know, that's the kind of guy who you say, okay, well, we've got to create room for him.
Right, right.
Mike Holt is a guy who down the road, you may have to create room for him.
Might.
You know, that's the kind of guy they're going after because they're not in a spot where the role player is that important to them as much anymore. Not that they still don't need him, but again, they're spending more money now.
Yeah, and they've generally, I think Darvish will be the biggest challenge agent to see how well they're spending it, really.
Well, we're going to get it. The thing with that is what's great about that is you get a very quick, we're going to find out pretty quickly.
But in the one position where they really don't have like a profile guy, they're trying to find one in center field. I think that's why they think Leonis Martin could be their guy, because David Murphy's really not a profile left
fielder.
Right, and
they don't want Josh Hamilton out there in center every day if they can avoid it.
Right, and then I think the other spot is first base. And
they had one. They traded him away.
Yeah, absolutely. And now they have sort of Michael Young and sort of Mitch Moreland. Neither of those guys are real profile first basemen. That's why I think the proof of their approaching this like the Yankees, like they want a profile guy basically every spot, will be if they go out and sign Prince Fielder. And I don't think it's going to happen, but wouldn't shock
I'll
me.
Say this. It wouldn't shock me for one thing because
it fits everything else they're doing.
For one thing, also, they can – hey, Scott Boras is a very, very good at getting money for his clients.
Correct.
That being said, at this point, there's not a team out there who, if you're the Rangers, you can basically sit back and see, okay, we're going to give you a reasonable but not extravagant offer. And if you don't want to take it, that's fine. And if you want to go to the Nationals, that's
exactly.
fine.
Exactly.
But what are your other options? You can take, or if you want to take.
Market seems to be dwindling.
It is.
And most teams have spent a lot of their offseason, what they had budgeted.
And even the mystery teams coming in. At this point, I don't know if that works as much anymore.
I agree. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. The other part, about the Rangers list that I do think is worth talking about, JJ, is the risk inherent there. Which of their guys I think that their top five is pretty easy to divine when it's Darvish, Profar, Martin Perez, Michael, Leonis Martin. After that, the Neil Ramirez, Cody Buckle, Jorge Alfaro, Christian Villanueva, Rougned Odor.
And then you can go. And the best way to put it is like if you get our handbook, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Yeah, Jordan Akins at 12 is a pretty stout. I think he's 12. He might be 13 now.
But it's not much. The difference, the gap between him and number six, Neil Ramirez, is not that large.
It's the same vein of player. Which of those guys do you think is the safest bet, and which of those guys do you think is the biggest risk? I guess I should probably throw Leonis Martin into that group because he has not accomplished, in my mind, as much as those top four guys.
I'd say the riskiest is Alfaro. He's a catcher for one.
Right.
His plate discipline right now consists of C-ball, swing hard.
That's it.
I think it was 4 to 54 or something
that. Yeah, 4 to 45 or 5 to 50 or something.
And which, hey, let me say this. He was a Colombian signee in 2010.
Yeah.
So if you have to add some – and he's a catcher. If you have to add some polish, there's some understandable reasons for that there.
Correct.
Because you're talking about a guy who is very young still. And it's always tougher if you're a catcher because you've come to – if you said you're going to just, major in catching, like learning how to catch.
That's acceptable.
For the 2 to 3 years, it takes a while to pick it up.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that Profar has the best plate discipline in their system. And I think that's one real risk of all their high upside hitters. Most of them have real plate discipline and strikeout and contact rate issues. I don't know that he's the riskiest, but I do think – I think I agree with you that Alfaro is the riskiest. I have my concerns about Cody Buckle. He sounds like a guy I should love. He's like a big long-toss guy, Trevor Bauer clone in some ways, was Bauer's high school teammate. There's a lot of neat stuff in there, but I just can't – I'm surprised he ranked as high as he did just considering that he's a 6-foot righty. It doesn't sound like there's really a premium pitch in there. There's a lot of good pitches and good control – I want to see Cody Buckle do well. He's the kind of guy that I actually usually like.
Right.
But he just stuck out to me in this system. He doesn't have as big a tools as the other guys do.
You're seeing a lot of 50-55s.
Right, a lot of 55s, and maybe if you squint, it's a 60. You know, but
not anything where you go 70, you know.
There's a lot of guys in their system where you're looking at some 70 tools elsewhere. And I also have my doubts about Leonis Martin. You know, I've talked to enough scouts who think he's a tweener. And, you know, I think that it's just harder to come from Cuba and be in the major leagues than people think it is. So I think all the Yoenis Cespedes fans can appreciate that. There's been so much talk about Cespedes. I think it's just harder to come here and play 160 games a year than people think it is. So I'm not as high on Martin as the average bear. It's the Baseball America podcast. I'm getting a lot of feedback on Twitter about asking questions, but now the questions have all turned into, how are you doing? Oh, how are all you doing? So like, that was Michael Schlacht's question actually, the former Rangers farmhand. He might still be a Rangers farmhand.
Doing well.
Yeah, and he says, like, yeah, and then Dirk Hayhurst says, how are all of you doing? And then someone else says, how are all you doing? So it's
I think we're doing pretty well, but you know, the handbook is done, and all, so we're doing okay. Thanks for asking, guys.
That's right. We're all doing well, and we'd love to have either of them on the show. We'll get to that after we record the podcast, have them on the Skype. The Angels are the other big hitter in the division, JJ. Clearly not the same level of farm system as the Rangers, despite Mike Trout's presence. It's really – and we've had this debate on the Angels – I think that you could make the case the Angels are one of the most inconsistent teams in the draft in terms of not signing guys and either really hitting or really whiffing. They're not a lot of in-between because they're also a high-risk, high-reward system.
Right. And again, with them, again, I think it makes sense to do that, though, because you have to take those big swings because the complementary piece isn't as important to them. How much did they spend on their outfield in the past 4 years?
Well, just on center field, they spend a lot of money on center fielders.
My point being that,
yeah,
and they've actually the funny thing is they spent all that money, and the two best center fielders they have in their organization are the two guys that they developed.
That's right, Borges and Trout.
But the point I'm making though is that they're not going to go out there and say, "Hey, let's draft this solid college player who's he's kind of a tweener. He'll
right.
never be a regular, but he could be help." That guy is not the guy they're really going after. Generally, they're going after the guy who you say, okay, he has a chance. He has a tool that makes you think he could be.
I do think, I don't know if you can technically call this irony, but the fact that they won their World Series with David Eckstein at shortstop, and they didn't draft David Eckstein. He was a waiver pickup, but they would never draft a player like David Eckstein. He's anathema to everything that they do in the scouting and player development. At least previously, they've had a lot of turnover. JJ,
we don't even know right now because I mean, right now there's been so much turnover. It's like, okay, you know, we don't know on the player development side how much things are going to change. You know,
right now is Scott Servais, who came from Texas to Anaheim, is he going to kind of try to implement some of those Rangers high upside, high risk, high reward players? And will he be able to bring the same level of development to the Angels that they've had in Texas?
And I'll say this. I give a thumbs up on that hire for the Angels.
Oh, yeah. I love Jerry DePoto's hire as a general manager, and the same thing with Scott Servais as assistant GM.
These both make a whole lot of sense, and so we'll see, you know, we'll see what goes on going forward. But
their scouting department hasn't changed as much, despite the fact they got rid of Eddie Bain. Rick Wilson was his national cross-checker. I've talked to Rick about this. I've talked to Jeff Malinoff, I've talked to area guys in their system. Not much about their basic philosophy has changed. I think Eddie was a casualty of basically a power struggle in the organization.
And then there was a casualty of power struggle, and then there's been casualties since then.
Correct.
Other
Absolutely.
People in the power struggle.
Absolutely. But I we're going to see Eddie Bain in a prominent position, and we do before we see Tony Regan's. I'll take Eddie's track record over Tony's. But I do think the legacy of that is that it's not a good sign for your top 10 when a third-round college reliever is in your top 10. I like Nick Mirande. He's different from the average third-round college reliever because I think he could start. But that's not usually a good sign, JJ. They have two college relievers in their top 10 and Daniel Tillman as well.
Another way to put it is it's not a great sign. The Orem Owls have a very distinctive cap.
They do, and they also have a distinctive mugshot that they send out with the right. baseball in the background that's
and,
annoying
and
as
there's
heck.
Four of their guys in their top 10. Nothing against you know, Orem or anything like that.
Or Owls.
Or Owls with a Z. but something against the fact that that's four guys in your top 10 who have yet to really, you know, hit full season ball. That's kind of that's a sign. Okay, there's a lot of guys who are a long ways
right.
away.
Their 2010 draft right now is the big issue for them because they had a lot of extra picks and they went super high risk on that. And Chevy Clark was an overdraft, not working out. They've had some draft picks who've instantly flamed out. Chevy Clark and Ryan Bolden leaped to mind from two drafts in a row.
They've had some injuries too.
Cam Bedrosian's Tommy John surgery not helping. So that's why I said they've been very inconsistent in the draft. And Caleb Cowart is a big X factor, and we'll see. The consensus was that he was a pitcher, not a hitter. He wants to hit. He sees himself as Chipper Jones, part two, and we'll see if he could be a switch-hitting third baseman with power. I don't think Chipper Jones ever struck out 81 times in half a year, no matter at any time in his career. So Caleb Cowart has work to do at the plate, but I do like his talent.
And we'll see. Also, Taylor Lindsay had a very loud year last year. We'll see. You know, he's got to make the jump to full season ball. But you had 362 even in
the Pioneer League. That's still very, very good.
The guy we haven't talked about is almost because we love him. He's great.
That's right.
He's super cool.
We don't have that much more to add about Mike Trout.
He's really good.
We've said it all, and that's a nice way to start a top 10.
That's the thing is that. You know, when we talk about, oh, they're top 10, you know, there's four guys, you know, who are in short season in Orem, you know, have a reliever. You know what? This is not still at that same level as some of these teams, like when we were talking about some of these AL Central teams. If you got Mike Trout at the top of your list,
yeah,
you're a solid farm system right there, because the reality of it is that you get more bang for, if you can produce, if Mike Trout is the guy we think he's going to end up being.
Right.
That's a franchise-changing type player.
He's going to be worth a lot of wins in mm-hmm. his career. And here's a question.
And he's the kind of guy you can't go out and just – you can't go get that guy generally
right.
anywhere else but develop him unless you're willing – look, Albert Pujols now, yes, the Angels went and got Albert Pujols.
Right.
They're not getting
– It cost them.
But it cost them. And also, they're paying – to get Albert Pujols as he starts to go into the decline of his career.
They paid him, in it.
Right. They paid him a lot of money to say, and with the idea, you have to go in this eyes open, especially length that contract. We're going to hopefully get him at his best early on, and then he's so good that even as he drops off, he'll still be a very useful player.
Correct. The other thing that, I don't believe we've asked this question yet. Not consistently. We should do it for all four teams here in this podcast. How many top 100 guys do you have for the Angels? I think they're probably going to have three top 100 guys, because I actually like Garrett Richards a little bit.
I think three. I don't think Helwig. I like Helwig probably more than most, but
Johnny
Helwig's
he's a fun number 100. If there are four, he might be number 100.
But it's three.
He would be that number 100.
I don't think he's got the track record yet.
I don't think so either. But he'd be a fun number 100. How about the Rangers? How many top 100 guys for the Rangers? I have a feeling it's going to be at least five.
And I think
and when you get
Neil
to the
Ramirez
back, Neil Ramirez might
mix.
Get in there. Exactly.
It's a 5-6.
It's a 5-6 top 100. There are no nines this year. Rangers, the Royals were nine last year, correct?
Yeah, yes.
I don't think we're going to have any nines.
No, we don't have nine.
Because the Rangers are in the top of our farm system rankings. They're not. I don't know if they're number one or not, because we haven't
Yeah, we haven't set that yet. Yu Darvish, there's been moves that have made that
exactly.
have changed things up. But
the one that we did in the book did not include Yu Darvish, and I don't remember where they ranked, but they were in the top five. Now we're moving on to the other half of the division.
The lesser half.
And it's not as exciting.
Guys.
Let's start with the A's in alphabetical order. Their top 10, JJ, at the time that we did it for the book and the time that the issue came out, are radically different. And
yes.
That's a good thing for the Oakland Athletics.
When they did it for the book, their top 30 was bad. I think is the only way to put it.
I agree.
I mean, there was a whole lot of guys. I'll put it this way. There were guys who you said, wait, that guy's a top 10 guy?
Right, right.
And the response is, yeah, not because I really feel I have some strong conviction about this guy, but because someone, you know, you don't just leave it blank at a certain point.
And that's the thing. You have to have 10 no matter what. No
right.
matter what organization it is, you have to have 10.
Adrian Cardenas is the guy that jumps out to my mind. He was a top 10 guy, and I was thinking, at this point –
He was actually the guy where I think when he was in the top 10, we were like, wait a minute. We're not putting this guy in the top 10.
Look,
nothing personal, Adrian.
Nothing personal, but Adrian Cardenas is not on the ascent part of his prospect path.
Correct. I do love that both him and his former high school teammate, Chris Marrero, are still prospect eligible. I think that's kind of laughable, but Adrian Cardenas has
former high school player of the year.
He was our high school player of the year. It wasn't a great year for high school players, but now with all these trades, as the A's punt
really
toward 2014,
it was high school player of the year. Yeah, it really
in 2006.
Wasn't a great year. Yeah. But back then he was a top 10 guy, and we're like, yeah, man, that's not good for the A's. Grant Green was way higher than. I personally is like, man, okay, well, I guess I don't see who would put behind him. Now you look at it, and number one, number two, number four, number seven, number 10 are
all
guys that they've traded for this offseason.
I do still think they're the top 10 with the most 26-year-olds in it, with Michael Taylor. And then the biggest shock, I think, of any top 10 to me is Jermaine Mitchell being in their top 10. And he's a neat story, and he's a guy that the A's really liked when they first drafted.
Back in 06, speaking of.
And that's the thing, it was 2006, and he was an old college junior, if memory serves. So Jermaine Mitchell's been kicking around a while. He's had some injury issues. He's always had speed. He's always had bad speed, but kind of a flat bat path. So it's always a question of how much contact he's going to make and how impactful will that contact be. He seems like he's starting to put things together. He's a good story. I think the A's were hoping that he would have been ready maybe, say, 2 years ago. Better late than never, I suppose. They've got a lot of questions in their outfield. Jermaine Mitchell and Michael Taylor are in that mix, as are newly acquired Colin Cowgill, newly acquired Josh Reddick. It's a complete wholesale change, because last year their main starting outfielders were DeJesus. I guess they have Coco Crisp back, Ryan Sweeney, and Josh Willingham. Three of those guys are gone. Crisp is back, and he'll be surrounded by these young guys.
But the other way to put it, here's the difference when we're talking about. These guys would be guys who are not very useful for the Rangers.
Correct.
Or the Angels.
Absolutely.
Because they're not playing.
When you're drafting...
I mean, I'm not saying they can't. There's not a way. Here's the reality. When Nelson Cruz came to the Rangers, he was not more highly considered than some of these guys.
Absolutely, yeah. They exposed him on waivers,
right,
and kept him.
And he turned into something. So I'm not saying none of these guys can turn in, but at where they are right now... You look at the A's, it's like, there's opportunities there.
Oh, yeah.
You look at the Rangers and the Angels, these guys are like, okay, that guy's going to sit in AAA in case there's an injury.
Yeah.
The difference.
And let's put it this way. The way the A's have drafted, for the most part, for a decade or more, as chronicled, we all know, in the book and the movie, is great at getting complimentary players. Well, when you're complimenting Hudson, Mulder, Zito, Chavez, Tejada,
Giambi,
that's great. That's smart. When you're complimenting Kurt Suzuki, I love Kurt Suzuki, but when you're complimenting Kurt Suzuki, Cliff Pennington, Coco Crisp, Derek Barton, not so much. And that's where they're left, and that's why they had to punt for 2014. They have not drafted or developed or evaluated in trades very well when it comes to hitters for a long time. There's no other way to say it, is there, JJ?
No, and here's the guy I find fascinating, and I don't want to, you know,
Grant Green. You're fascinated by Grant Green.
I am fascinated by Grant Green. And one of the ways is, you know, moved to center field last year. And that just really, I kind of wonder about Grant Green as a center fielder. I don't know if he can be an impact guy as a center fielder. And there were questions about whether he could stay at short. But my whole question is that, you know, he's not a burner. I mean, that's just,
right.
That's not his game. And we haven't seen a whole lot of power ever either.
He might be a tweener. He could be destined to be a tweener, because if he's not a center fielder, I don't think he has the power to go to a corner.
No.
So that's the real issue.
No. I mean, he doesn't have power to go to a corner. I always thought the interesting thing to me was that they moved him to center, which I don't understand why they did. I think his best position would be second base. That's one position that's not really open.
Right. Yeah, they like Jamile Weeks as actually a bat they've developed that they like, and I think other people like as well. That's the big key, is that other people think he can be good.
Now,
to me, Grant Green, I think he has a chance to be a center fielder. There are a lot of scouts that tell you center field's easier than the outfield corners especially converting.
My thing, though,
his bat has to fit in center field.
Right, I was going to say, that's my question, is okay, what does he bring you?
They clearly hedged their bets by bringing back Coco Crisp. I mean, A, they had to give money to somebody. but they hedge their bets with a guy who's best suited for center field offensively.
If you're an A's fan, the hope you have, though, is that their top four, you know, very rarely do you hit on four if you have four pitchers at the top of your list.
Right.
They hit on all four. If you hit on all four of these guys, you've got a pretty impressive rotation.
Well, the best part about that is that you have two of those guys in Parker and Peacock have already been in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. And then you have another guy in Sonny Gray who has already been in AA.
He'll move
and
quick.
He should move quickly. And at the very least, I think people think that he's going to be a great relief pitcher if he doesn't stay as a starter.
And
I
then you've got a high upside guy in A.J. Cole.
Exactly. So it's a good group.
No,
you're
going to
have
four
guys. Absolutely.
Well, now we asked the question. So how many top 100 guys do you think are here? I know there's
four. I think
four.
It's four. I think it's five. I think that Michael Choice is going to be in my top 100. So the A's probably have five top 100 guys, which is shocking.
Which, and the difference is that before these trades, they had one.
Choice.
Yes. And I don't think, I mean.
Oh, no, two. Sonny Gray.
No,
Sonny Gray would
have
been.
Yeah, they had two. And now
so they've added three.
Yeah, they've added three. So they have added
not
talent.
Not bad. They did add talent. I like these trades for Oakland, how they did a good job. And I still am somewhat concerned that they didn't trade for more bats. Because they've shown me they know how to develop pitching. And then they do know how to trade for pitching as well.
But they haven't had an off. They haven't
I don't
had
know
offer.
That I still don't trust their ability to evaluate hitters. Nothing personal against those scouts, but they have not drafted and developed or signed internationally a lot of hitters yet. And conspicuous in his absence, Michael Lanoa. it's been a rough 6 years for that franchise. Moving on, Seattle Mariners, JJ, I know you did the Baseball America show last Sunday. Coming up again this Sunday, as it is every Sunday, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, XM 89, Sirius 209. John and JJ will host the Sunday.
Actually, I'm off this one, I thought.
I don't think so. Okay. I think you're on the schedule. Okay, we'll check the schedule. that'll be for after the podcast. Pineda for Montero trade. Jesus Montero goes straight to number one for the Mariners. Really no question there. Who had worse hitting prospects before this trade, Seattle or Oakland? That's a tough call. Ooh.
Seattle, I'd say.
I think Seattle as well. But I like Nick Franklin, but you know they don't have any power in their farm system unless until you acquire Jesus Montero.
Who has lots of
power. Now they have lots of power. Pitching prospects, even after the trade, whose do you like better, Tawan Walker, James Paxton, Danny Hulson, or your top four guys? I guess. Parker, Peacock, Cole. Who would be your fourth Mariner that you'd throw into that?
Chance Ruffin.
Yeah, is there a starter? No. It would have been Campos, but they traded him. Which would you take? The four A's guys or the three Mariners guys? It's not
That's
an easy
tough.
One.
That's tough. I probably would take the three Mariners guys. But I'm a big Tawan Walker fan. I think you have a better chance of having, you know, you've got a couple lefties there. I always like that. But it's close. That's very close. What about you?
I think I would take Seattle's on upside because I actually believe a lot in their left-handers, even though I have questions. Like, I don't think Danny Hulton was the second-best player in the draft. I really do like him. I'm fascinated to see how his delivery and all that hoo-ha will work. I'm really fascinated.
Right. We can tell that story. I mean, like, we've told it before. Like, we said it on the, you know, XM show. But you saw Hulson this year. Again, we'll do our standard disclaimer. We're not scouts.
I wish I could show on the podcast the knee bend that he does, which apparently the Mariners are trying to take away.
But you got the knee bend, and you came back and you said, how have I not heard multiple guys talking about how crossfire he is?
Yeah, he's incredibly crossfire. And I asked a couple scouts after the draft, why is he not compared to a left-handed version of Kyle Sleeth? Because a lot of area scouts around here, or even cross-checkers, saw Sleeth, Wake Forest 2003, I think he was the third overall pick in the draft. He might have been second, fourth. He was in the top four picks.
This is a little scouting story for things not to do.
Yeah.
If you draft a guy in the top five picks of the draft, and he's really crossfire, don't draft him with the idea of, hey, we're going to bring you in. We like you.
We've
got to change you because you're this really crossfire delivery. We can't let that. I mean, we can't let that go.
So the question has always been with Sleeth that I've never gotten a great answer to because Kyle Sleeth was a stud.
Yeah,
he was
we
big
saw
time.
Him. He was
really good, and he went fourth overall for a reason. I guess it was fourth overall. But the big issue to me was, did he get – he had Tommy John surgery, and he's a guy who did not come back well from Tommy John surgery. I mean, that just says that he didn't do the rehab properly, because most people who do it do come back. So that's on Sleeth. But did he have Tommy John surgery because he threw crossfire, or because they changed him after he threw crossfire? I don't think we can really answer that question. I'm of the belief that people have muscle memory, and they develop
Danny
muscle
Holson's
memory.
Who Danny Dolson is.
That's it. So you can't change him.
You can, and there's.
Or you shouldn't change him.
Let me make clear too. There's different things, like, and you know, neither of us, we're not scouts, and we're not pitching coaches
right.
either. But we talk to a whole lot of people.
We
both
have an
fascinated
interest
about
in
pitching.
It. Correct.
And the thing that jumps out is
we have an informed opinion about it.
What jumps out is that when you say you can't change, you can. There may be a point. If Danny Holson hits a point and you go, you know what you are doing does not work.
Right.
Well, then you change. And if something happens because you changed them, you had no choice.
The whole question for me will be
there are
judging that success, because they're talking about jumping him straight to the major leagues, JJ, and that's going to be very difficult to judge. Is he not succeeding? If he doesn't have success, is he not succeeding because he's jumped straight to the major leagues? Or is he not succeeding
because there are things with the crossfire delivery that are concerns.
I think it helps him get inside, though, to right-handed hitters. I think his whole repertoire plays off that. And to me, the whole question is, he produces high-quality stuff doing what he does now.
So you
That's
can't.
Why I would not want to change it.
Right. The other way to say it is that
I would give him a long time of failing before I changed him. That's what I should say.
The other way to put it is that, and there's a difference, changing a crossfire delivery is more significant than saying, hey, we're going to move you a little bit where you set up on the rubber.
Right.
There are things that you can do, like, okay, yes, when you move from where you're set up on the rubber, your eye, your picture, you know, it takes a little while to get comfortable with the new angles and all that, but you're not asking them to change muscle memory.
Right.
If you say, you know what, we noticed that you're pulling your takeaway, you're bringing the ball out of your glove too soon or too late.
The Matt Moore thing where he basically like changed the way he did his hands above his head before, instead of, you know, helping.
Again, you're tweaking.
Those are tweaks.
But you're not, that's not the same thing as saying, to me, those much bigger changes are you're crossfire and we're going to straighten you out. Or
that's basically fundamental to who you are as a pitcher.
But here's also my question with that is that when you see a guy who's crossfire, is he crossfire all the time? Because if you're talking about a guy who, well, two pitches he's crossfire, the next pitch he's straight on, the third pitch he opens up.
Right.
That's a different story. Then you're saying we've got to get you to where you are consistent.
Exactly. We need a consistent direction to the plate. Danny Holton has consistent direction
to
the
plate.
It's
always. Like, I mean, it's got this little spot where he lands.
His mechanics are pretty consistent. I'm not going to say whether they're good or bad, because I don't even believe that's an answerable question.
But they are consistent.
They're consistent, and he throws quality stuff the way he does it, and he throws quality strikes the way he does it. So to me, you leave him alone, and the whole question is, can he do it every 5 days?
That's not tweaking if you try to change him. That's changing.
That's overhauling, and I don't think he needs an overhaul, and the whole subject will be, can he do it every 5 days instead of every 7 days?
And again, if you draft a guy number two overall, to me, that's what you believe.
You got him
for what he is.
They gave him a pretty fat contract, JJ. It's one of the biggest contracts in draft history.
And they
clearly believe in the way that he does it.
You may disagree with me on this, but to me it's also different. Like, if you see a guy, if you're a scout and you see a guy who's got good stuff and he's got delivery problems and you take him in the eighth round, overhaul away.
I don't disagree with you there, actually.
Because then you're talking about, yes, and there's muscle memory on it, but what you're saying is he lasted to the eighth round because
that's right.
Teams don't think the way he does it now he can make it.
That's right. I think that it is different. They've put a lot of money behind Danny Holton as he is. How do you feel about James Paxton? I mean, he's an indie ball guy, so you should like him. You should be inclined to like him, even though he was not very good at independent baseball.
Not dominant.
His season last year, though, was pretty loud. And one thing that actually has convinced me on James Paxton, I used to be pretty low on him, but, you know, the Mariners have been on him since he was an amateur in Canada. And he was on Scott Matheson's dad's team, the Langley Blaze, home of Kyle Lotsgar, a guy that you like. But they've got a long history with James Paxton. I know all teams saw him back in the day, but they didn't draft him off what he did at Indy Ball. That was a blip to them. And I think the most important thing is that he actually did get at least a little work in during his long holdout. That's
thing
my point. It would have been better if he were either pitching in college right. that time or in someone's minor league system already.
And the thing about it is that he came out. A lot of these guys who have that long layoff, that first year back,
yeah,
things go poorly.
Right. Another he has
they
other
didn't go poorly for Paxton.
They didn't. He has other mitigating factors. He was young for his draft year. I don't think he turned 21 until even after he was drafted by the Mariners. I could be wrong, but I know he was young for his draft year. The year he got drafted by the Blue Jays. He's also, and again, he's Canadian, somewhat of a fresh arm. And he was at Kentucky, which frankly has a pretty good track record of developing pitchers.
Brandon Webb
and Joe Blanton stick out in my mind. But they've had other prospects who've they've done a pretty decent job with it over the years.
And we got others coming up, too.
We do. Alex Meyer and his five balls in one hand hands. So
he's the candy man of the 21st
that's
century.
That's right. So, and I like
reference
that.
Reference for our
he's not quite
listeners.
Early. He's not early Lombardi, though.
No.
I was showing that picture around yesterday. But yeah, I like their top three. We haven't even talked that much about Tawan Walker. He ranks ahead of both those left-handers. This guy just sounds like, J.J., everything you're supposed to have in a pitching prospect. Pitcher's frame, quick arm, athleticism, now stuff, youthful,
swing,
more than one swing and miss pitch. The only thing that's a negative on Tawan Walker is that he's been in low class A. Otherwise, there's no negatives, it seems like, with this guy. There's so much to like, and he's a prospect to get very excited about.
It's interesting to say that, and that's one of the things that is useful about the minor leagues is he was in low A. I promise you next year, you can accept a double A. Well, here's some negatives.
That's right.
Because that's what the minor leagues are for.
You're right.
Is that it is easy. We said this Jurickson Profar. At low A guy like that is so good that it's hard to find the negatives.
Yeah, you're right.
Guy goes up to double A, you'll find some negatives because, you know what?
Baseball hard.
Baseball's hard. Older guys are able to find these things. Rewind it. Like, I got Royals on the brain. I did my Royals chat yesterday. When Will Myers was an A-ball, hard to find much to not like.
You're right.
Especially at the plate. Will Myers goes to double A.
And gets a staph infection.
But pitchers find out, he doesn't like the ball in on his hand.
There's a hole.
We are going to throw to that hole until he proves it's not.
In low A, I don't know where the hole is. I'm just out here trying to do my thing.
Yeah, my
I'm just
thing
trying
is,
to throw the ball near the plate.
My thing is if I could get that umpire to put his arm out.
That's right.
I have succeeded on
By
this
By the
pitch.
Time you get to double A, wait a minute, this guy has a hole.
And I can
exploit it.
Right.
And guess what? The relief pitcher who's coming in who's throwing 97, he can exploit it too. And the lefty specialist who we're going to have it is a different game.
And that's what I just want to say with Tawan Walker. When we're saying that, that does not mean he doesn't have holes, but it is much harder to find them at that level than it is when they go up a letter.
My eyes are terrible. I'm trying to hear. So
here, I'll find the hole for you.
Find the hole. Where was the hole? That's awful. It is dark here. Let me just say this. It's dark in the podcast nook. Do we even turn it? Is that light on or is it just burned out?
I think it's just off.
That's okay. I'm not going to think as little of my eyes as I was about to. Because I was really disappointed. I just got my eyes checked.
His command and control still need some polish, which could be said about every A-ball pitcher. Every A-ball pitcher whose name is not Kevin Slowey. That was the one guy who.
That's right.
Like, that was always the example
of.
This is one guy I can say you could throw a current 60 command gun.
Vinny Catracola. Believe or not believe? I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. I'm probably not.
That
was a J.J. Cooper type. Vinny C. How do you feel about Vinny C?
I'm not a believer yet. Sorry.
That was a shorter answer than I was anticipating because I was going to turn the light on.
But. And he had a great year last year. He did. He had a great year. It's tough, though, because the scouting report on him is first baseman. Maybe he can play a little bit of corner.
Yeah, he's like a fringy.
That's right.
Honestly, he sounds like, you know what he reminds me of is Brandon Laird. That's who he sounds a lot like. Hey, Brandon Laird had a great year. The Eastern League's a harder league to hit in, and he blew up the Eastern League and dominated it and was a first base, third base, left field type. And he sounds like Vinny had a better offensive year than Brandon Laird. In a better offensive environment, but not that much. But I mean, the travel in the Southern League is really difficult. So I respect what he did, that he kept doing in the Southern League after he was in High Desert. But Brandon Laird's scouting reports are better on defense. He could actually be an average, maybe
a tick
above third baseman.
To me, if you said he's going to be a definite first third baseman, yeah.
Yeah, but so that...
That's the concern I have is that the bar, and we've talked about this before, the bar, if you are a first baseman who can play a little bit of outfield, especially if you're a right-handed hitting guy who does that. It's really high. I mean, it's really high.
It's very high.
Hey, if you rewound this, I don't think this is going to happen, but if you rewound this, go back 25 years, you could probably find a similar scouting report on Edgar Martinez, you know, coming up. He was a third baseman who really...
We have those. I was just looking at those for the Hall of Fame thing. Actually, one of the ones that we had on the prospect blog talked about how good he was on defense. That he was a solid, good hands third baseman. But yeah, I think that Vinny... the jury is still out for me on Vinny. I think he deserved to be in the top 10, certainly.
He had a very loud season, but he wasn't that old for the league.
We're both more Fernando Martinez guys that they got from the Tigers.
Right. And is
it Fernando or Francisco?
Francisco
Martinez, thank you.
But Francisco Martinez hasn't done as much yet. But also, at the same time, though, there's a whole lot of thinking that he will keep getting better and better and better because there's a lot of tools there.
Yeah, I'm a believer. I commend you for bringing him to our attention first last year in the Florida State League, and I'm definitely a believer, and I've found scouts who are believers in the Eastern League as well on Martinez. So how many top 100 guys have you got for the Mariners?
I'd say five.
I think it might be six.
I could see a six.
I think Francisco Martinez might be in there. So this is, you know, we're talking about a decent amount of top 100 guys out of a 14 division. We've got a six, and a five.
Oh, I'll put it this way. We just came through the desert.
Oh, yeah, the Central. Yeah, did we even talk about
that in the Central? We didn't do that on that, but we
Addison Reed's a one. So Cleveland's a one. I know we did it for both those teams. The Royals are going to be how many?
Well, we'll get to that. The Twins is Sano's a definite. You did the Twins, so help me here. Who else? How many would you have from the Twins?
It's really hard because, like, is Aaron Hicks a top 100 guy?
Not for me right now.
See, I think he's in. I think I even had him. I might have had him in my top 50. I don't know that Joe Benson is a cinch top 100 guy for some people.
No.
I think he is, but I mean, like Eddie Rosario, he may not be a cinch top 100 guy. Miguel Sano is. They have one for sure.
And they could go anywhere from two. They could go one to four.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The Royals, I'd say probably have five. John Lamb is probably the cutoff where you say, he could.
As Madonna said, he's going to be on the borderline.
He's like, yeah. I mean, if he was healthy, he'd be in it probably. But it's hard to be a – Jared Parker made it last year.
Right.
I want to say.
Jared Parker
was a ninth overall pick who threw harder.
And James Lamb also had an earlier injury.
Lamb, yeah.
John Lamb, thank you. Who's James Lamb?
His dad.
Oh, okay. There you go. Who's the Lamb who plays for UConn? Deron Lamb?
I cannot remember.
The tall, skinny guy. That guy's good. The rest of the American League Central, like you said, that's the desert.
Who we
the Indians
there?
And White Sox are one apiece.
Twins are somewhere between one and four.
Between one and four. The White Sox are five. And Detroit is not that many.
The Royals are five, yeah.
The Royals, yeah. Detroit's two. Castellanos and Turner. So, yeah, the American League West is carrying more than its fair share in that debate. We're going to wrap up this American League West podcast, and we're going to come back with another podcast that you'll see early next week. We're talking about the Prospect Handbook, the changes that we've made to the Prospect Handbook, the goodness that is the Prospect Handbook. And I also need to remind people that college preview time is here, and Aaron Fitt, today, as we are recording this, is in Columbia, South Carolina, hanging out with his main man, Michael Roth, for a feature for an upcoming Baseball America cover feature. But we're going to have a lot of college baseball podcasts while Aaron is here. One of them probably will be recorded at the Backyard Barbecue Pit, and Aaron will be eating, and I will not because I'm all pitted out, thanks to my brother on my birthday. But lots of podcast goodness to come at Baseball America, and the college preview will begin starting up February 17th, I guess, is when the season starts, like the 21st, your first weekly Monday Baseball America College podcast. So lots of podcast stuff to look forward to. JJ, thanks for being here, and thanks to you for listening and the download here on the Baseball America podcast. Until next time, so long, everybody.